Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here with Jen Murdy. Jen is head of high net worth practice and senior wealth advisor at Ballantyne Partners. It's a multifamily office. Assets under management are constantly changing, so I'm assuming $7 billion-ish is about right now?
That's right.
She's had an amazing career with key leadership roles in different organizations. I'm sure you'll hear a little about that today. Jen and I met through my brother, who I've had on the podcast, as they serve on the World Hope Board together. She has many passions, but one of them that's been clear as we've gotten to know each other is this passion for helping families connect their values and their investment capital through impact investing. So, Jen, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us this. Where are you located right now, and what's the weather like?
I'm looking at some snow out my window. I am in Massachusetts right now.
I know a little bit of your background, but can you share with us where you grew up, where you went to school, and then a high level of your career?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So I actually grew up in Kenya in East Africa. My parents moved there in the 1960s. They met there and ended up staying and living in Kenya for 35 years, where they worked and taught at a school. So I was born and raised there and moved to the United States when I was 18, where I went to college at Houghton College in upstate New York. And I then got a master's degree, an MBA at Simmons University. And I've spent my entire career working in the finance industry in some capacity. My very first job out of college actually was working at a single family office. And at the time, that was the first time I'd ever even heard that term. I didn't know what that was. But the reason I took the job is because we're working at a family foundation. And this particular foundation had a focus on human rights, women's rights and reproductive health, poverty alleviation, and environmental sustainability. And those were all areas that I personally valued and that were important to me. And so I took an entry-level job at this family foundation, and I spent 6 years there and learned a tremendous amount about philanthropy in general and how families who have wealth and have created foundations, how they think about giving away some of their wealth. So that's where I started my career. And then I ended up getting hired by the investment consultant that worked with that family in Boston when my husband and I moved to Boston. So I spent 15 years at Federal Street Advisors, and then it became known as Pathstone. And I had a number of different positions at that firm. When I first started working for them, I really had an opportunity to just learn what this firm did. And it was a multifamily office, so serving many different families and advising them on investments and planning. And so I learned what we did. And over the years, over those 15 years, I was involved in marketing and operations. I eventually became the COO and then the president of Federal Street Advisors. And then we sold our company to a Pathstone Family Office and became a larger multifamily office. And for 3 years, I served as the COO at Pathstone. And then for the last 2 years, I have been at Ballantyne Partners, where I'm now heading up the high net worth practice. And I work directly with families. As you said, I get involved with helping families think about their wealth and their investments and philanthropy and how they can use their money in ways that are meaningful to them and how it can align with their values. And I manage a team of 12 people, and we work with a large number of clients. It's very rewarding.
Well, you've obviously had an amazing career, and I have to believe that all the different steps that you were involved in at Pathstone or Federal Street has made you a more holistic executive as well as advisor. So I'm sure we'll hear more about that. So you've been on this journey, and you've obviously accomplished a ton. How would you best describe yourself today in the context of where you're at in your journey?
I love that question, to think about sort of where I am. Mm-hmm. I'm in my 40s now, so I'm hoping I'm about halfway through that journey, but we'll see. So, you know, as I said, I was fortunate enough to have spent the first 18 years of my life living on a different continent with a vastly different culture than I live in right now. And so that experience fundamentally shaped the person that I am and the core beliefs that I hold. I have no doubt that that has really changed who I am as a person. And so I am now in a career where I'm advising families and working in the wealth management space. And I would never have predicted, based on my interests and where I grew up, that that's work I would have been doing. Yet I love what I do. And so I would say the point I'm at this point because I've been really fortunate to have mentors and advocates along the way that have really, you know, enabled me to be successful. And so because I've had that support system for me, it's been a priority for me throughout my career and still is, figuring out ways to help other people and support those, you know, colleagues in the industry and others. Or I really have this philosophy that it's important for us to support each other, whether it's helping others find jobs or make introductions or whatever it might be. It really helps shape the company that you're at. It creates the culture there. It also helps shape the broader community. So for me, that's the Boston community and the industry at large. And I really think that we all can make small differences to improve the circles around us. So that's been something that's really important to me and continues to be where I am right now.
For those listening, you absolutely did that for us at Common Good very early on when we started. You made some introductions. And it's actually interesting because I would tell you, so I was in the traditional finance world prior to this, you know that. And but I've been shocked. I've been in this space now for 5 years, and there definitely is a collegiality, is that a right word, that I just didn't see it in the traditional. And so you're actually one of those people that I look at and go, "Boy, you were very generous to us making connections and whatnot." All right, so I'm going to ask a pretty specific question here, and I'm going to project myself into this. So if you don't want to answer, you don't have to answer. But if I look at your career, at least your job prior to where you are right now, you clearly were on this, you were in management, upper management, and I'm assuming very easily could have stayed as president or could have become CEO, either where you're at or elsewhere. On paper, you know, maybe title where you're at today is adjacent, down, whatever, however you say that, but it's not the same trajectory that it seemed like you were on. I'm curious how you processed that and why you did that.
It's a great question. Actually, I've been asked this several times and I actually like answering this question. Titles have never mattered to me. So maybe that's the simple answer.
Okay.
It's not something that gives me any specific satisfaction. I've worked really hard in my career. I've been extremely fortunate to have been successful and to have taken on many different leadership roles. And I've loved all of it. It's been an amazing journey. I got to a point where I was ready to make a change and to do something different. And I had known Ballantyne Partners for many, many years and many of the executives there and had always thought very highly of the firm. So when they reached out to me about this position, they actually asked me that question, you know, is this something you would want to do? And it actually was exactly what I wanted to do. And I am in a leadership role. I'm heading up one of the practices at the firm. So there's a high net worth group and we have a family office group. It's a different type of leadership role. But what I love the most about it is I now get to work directly with clients. So I had moved away from that because as I went into different executive leadership positions, the face-to-face and time with clients was reduced further and further. And so I get to work directly with clients now. I'm hands-on and get to work collaboratively with a team of 12 other amazing professionals that are working on the same clients that I work on in the high net worth group. It's allowing me to, I guess, sort of bring together a lot of the different skills that I have built up over the years in the many different roles I played primarily at Federal Street Advisors and Pathstone. And they've all kind of, all those different things I did have come together into one role. So I'm really enjoying it and love the work that I do. And, you know, that you can give me whatever title you want. That doesn't matter to me. Yeah. I want a job that I'm happy in, where I know that I'm helping people, you know, helping both clients and employees, and that it's something I wake up every day looking forward to doing, which I do.
Well, I commend you because I think if I were to generalize, at least the way that I believe people view kind of their career, it's, you know, if you're not going straight up, somehow you're you're failing, or maybe that's a bit strong, but I'm always intrigued when individuals make a conscious choice to maybe break that traditional cycle of I got to go straight up. And obviously there's deep meaning and passion and why you did it. So it's just interesting. And I commend you. I commend you because I just think there's this drive in, maybe it's a world that it's always got to be this linear all the way. And passion is so critical. And
it is. And how you spend your day, right? Yeah. How you spend your time. And we only have this one life, and I want to be doing the things that I enjoy. And I would also say, you know, I'm in a role now where I have a good work-life balance. I mean, everybody talks about that, but I truly do. I spend a lot of time with my children and my husband, which is really important to me. And so that, all things considered, that's what I want to be doing. I want a job that I'm passionate about and where I am playing a leadership role, but I also get to spend time with my family.
Well, you just look at the role you're in, and it's got to be awesome to interact with investors and to work hands-on with them and yet still be in a leadership role and to be able to have a huge impact. Along those same lines, and you can answer this question of where you sit today or even broader, how are you trying to change the world?
You know, it's such a big question, and I struggle. When you told me you were going to ask me that, I struggled with thinking about how I would answer.
Yep.
You know, in my own little part of the world, I feel like I'm helping my clients. And I hope that has some greater ripple effect and impact in their lives.
Oh.
I do serve on two boards. You mentioned one, World Hope International. I have always in my professional career and devoted time on boards. So currently I'm on two, World Hope and then a family foundation. You know, so I feel as though that's part of my way of giving back is volunteering my time and my financial resources to support organizations in the nonprofit space that are having some direct impact on changing people's lives. And World Hope is certainly one of those. The other way I would answer that is back to my children. They're my world.
Yeah.
And I am trying to raise children. I have two boys that in elementary school, so they're young still. And so really trying to shape them to be young men who celebrate differences and diversity, you know, whether it's racial, ethnic, gender identity, sexual orientation, and understand that those differences create a more beautiful world, and that our schools and our businesses and our communities are way better off when we have that diversity. And also, you know, not just diversity, but inclusivity and figuring out ways to create an inclusive community, company, you know, whatever your sort of sphere of influence is. And so for me, it's really important that they understand and value differences. And a lot of that, as I said at the beginning, comes from, you know, I grew up in a completely different culture and learned a lot of different perspectives and ways of living and belief systems. And that has really shaped me in respecting that there are many, many, many of those around the world. You know, just because there's a way of doing things in my little part of the world doesn't mean that that's either the best way or the only way. And I want to make sure that my boys understand that.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And so this next question, not to have high expectations for you, but I kind of do. I think because of your growing up in Africa, and then I think obviously with all the work that you've done with families, I'm curious how you're going to answer this next question. And it's very broad on purpose, but when did you realize the power of capital?
I would say probably in my first job, when I started working for a family foundation that was doing philanthropic work, both domestically and internationally. I mean, obviously I grew up abroad, but we didn't have a lot of money and I wasn't ever surrounded by people that had a lot of money. And I didn't even really know the reality of what else life was like. We lived in a pretty rural part of Kenya. It was certainly with the first job and I was exposed to a lot more about the sort of injustices and unequal systems and ways in which people around the world have access to basic human rights. And so I think that was very transformative for me. And understanding that a family who had a business, sold the business, and put a majority of their money into a foundation that they then give away some every year. The power of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, at the same time, I really question, as many people do, you know, with foundations, you're only required to give away 5% of the endowment every year to maintain your 501c3 status with the IRS. So I questioned, you know, that there's 95% of that endowment mm-hmm. is just sitting there. And it's a lot of, for many foundations, it's a lot of money. And so what can you do with that portion of the endowment where maybe it can be creating some positive change? And that's what really led me down the path of impact investing
mm-hmm.
and the idea of figuring out how to use that part of the foundation's power to create positive change. And certainly at least not be facilitating negative behavior at a minimum. So that's where I really first understood what could be done with large amounts of money.
In dealing with the different families or foundations that you have, is there anything that stands out to you, either why people do this or the passion or the joy that you see from it? Any just random thoughts for us?
You know, the why is different for everybody. You know, sometimes families connect on, you know, they are connected to a particular social issue, whether it's the environment or human rights or racial justice, whatever it might be. And I would say it's the clients I work with that are very philanthropic and spend a lot of their time focused on the organizations they're giving their money to are often the same ones who are all, you know, interested in the idea of impact investing.
Okay.
So really aligning the values that they have in all aspects of their lives. And I'm sure you've heard this in the studies show, you know, the generations coming up who are inheriting mm-hmm. money, that seems to be almost the default. I mean, mm-hmm. I've spoken with many, many people in their 20s and 30s, and they don't really even understand why you would do it any other way. They're like, for me to be my true self, I need to make sure that my money that's sitting in an investment account and the money I'm giving away and the job I have and how I spend my time is all aligned. So I feel as though I'm my authentic self. So I hear that a lot.
Do you find that families or foundations is probably a bad question, but do they start with philanthropy or do they start with impact investing or is it all over the place?
It's all over the place. I wouldn't say I've seen, you know, one over the other. I mean, with a foundation, of course, they've started with philanthropy. And then many foundations will, you know, as I talked about, figure out what else they can do with the assets and the endowment. Yeah, it's all different ways. Sometimes they start with, you know, an interesting investment idea.
Yep.
Right. That they think is a really great idea from a financial standpoint, but they also like the social value or the environmental value it brings. So it really depends.
Okay. So now we're going to switch the discussion from capital and go to stewardship. I'm sure there's other ways you could describe it. I talk about stewardship. So what does stewardship mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, simply, I think of it as a responsibility to take care of something. For stewardship, that can mean so many different things. You know, in my professional career, I feel as though I have a stewardship in terms of taking care of clients and advising them on their own financial situations. In my own personal life, I, you know, this is what a lot of people often say is, you know, that we're stewards of the earth and its finite resources. I very much believe that. I have seen that living in Kenya, you know, natural disasters and how there needs to be an appreciation for water and, you know, basic things that this earth provides to us that we don't always, certainly here in America, it's harder for us to sort of see day to day the value of that. And I guess the other thing when I think about being a steward is just in our interactions with each other, and this may be a little abstract, but
I love it.
I try to look at, you know, an interaction with a person or a situation or a life moment as a gift, and it's been presented to me as a gift. And so I have a responsibility to appreciate that gift. And whether that's time with a person or a particular experience or a moment. And so framing it in sort of stewardship, I believe, you know, I need to then leave something positive behind from that. And so whether it's an interaction that leaves that person with new knowledge or a better feeling, or, you know, so whether it's in a comment that I say or a thought that I have, or I leave with an experience. So I view that we need to be stewards of the gifts that are given to us, whatever those are, tangible and intangible.
Yeah, I love that comment. And I think the other thing for me when I hear you say that is we all have an ability and hopefully desire, and we all have gifts, whatever that gift is. And so I love that idea of going into every interaction, every conversation as the ability to be vulnerable and to give of yourself, because we all have something. I mean, yeah, right. some have better at this or that or whatnot. But I mean, even in, you look at the differences in our political world today, and it's like, okay, there clearly are differences, but can we also talk about the commonalities? And I don't feel like we even talk about commonalities anymore. So,
yeah, and it is important to find those commonalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With a name like Common Good, you can see that we're... We align in that regard. All right. So we're gonna have a little fun now. This other stuff maybe has been a little more grueling and heady for you. If you could have one dream come true in your life, what would it be? And if you want to throw in another one, that's fine too.
I would say, and this is somewhat of a fun dream, because I can't say world peace, right?
Okay,
so
a real
dream that I want to try to make happen.
Yeah.
Is I would love to be able to start bringing my children to Kenya on a more regular basis. Mm. So we are planning a trip in a year or two, obviously with the pandemic, sort of waiting to see when that can be a reality. But they're old enough now that I would actually like to make it more of a routine. You know, I'm raising my kids in a wealthy suburb in Boston, and there's guilt in that for me. And so it's really important for me that my kids understand the broader world around them and grow up to appreciate and respect the many incredible cultures and traditions and people that are different from ours. And, you know, I was fortunate to have that experience as a kid for, 18 straight years. And so I want to try to recreate that in some way. And we do already do a lot of traveling with them, but Kenya holds a really special place in my heart. And so my hope is to be able to start doing that more regularly. And I know, of course, it will be fun, but I am also hopeful it will help shape my kids to have a broader perspective and build respect for people who look different than them and live lives differently than them.
Well, I love that, because that's actually an attainable goal that you can go do.
That is the plan.
Yeah. Well, then you'll have to go visit Jonathan over in Rwanda. Now, this is a classic American. I'm like thinking it's like, whatever, 2 hours away.
It is close. It's not, it depends where in Kenya you are, but it is close. And we could go do that.
Well, for the record, I still, when I look at the northeast of the United States, like, because I grew up in California and Oregon, like when I look at a map, I have no clue how far anything is away from New York to DC.
Yes. And Africa is a much larger continent than most people realize. It is massive.
Have you seen the graphic that has the outline of Africa and all the countries that fit inside of it?
Yes. So that gives you some perspective.
It's I was shocked. The first time I ever saw it was 3 months ago from Jonathan.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing.
It is simply amazing. Well, and then even, talking to my brother, and obviously you probably echo the same thing. You know, he's like, when you talk about Africa, it's not like one monolithic group.
No.
I mean, it's like very, very diverse.
Exactly. Yeah, very different. I mean, I was fortunate to have spent some time. I took a sabbatical many years ago and spent time in Ghana in West Africa. And I specifically chose that because I wanted to spend time in a different part of Africa, knowing that they were going to be very different. And of course, there were some similarities. But yes, to your point, when people say Africa,
right,
it really means way, way more.
Well, Jen, I really appreciate you taking the time. And it's fun to glean from your experience, your knowledge. And I hope that this was intriguing for you, if nothing else.
It was. I enjoyed it. Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to ask these questions. I hope it was interesting.
It goes back to your statement. We're both going to give something and take something out of this. And so hopefully others can glean something as well. And
I hope so.
Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.